Welcome to Writers' Voices with Monica and Carolyn. Monica couldn't be with us today, so I'm the guest co-host, Cheryl Fusco-Johnson, and we're thrilled to have with us writer Natalie Goldberg. Hello, Natalie.
Hi. How is it out there in Iowa?
Beautiful day. Beautiful. It's really been a wonderful month, actually. We've had low humidity and just beautiful days.
It's been incredible.
Great.
I want to introduce you to our listeners. Natalie Goldberg is the author of Writing Down the Bones, which revolutionized creative writing for many people. Over a million copies of this book were sold. It was translated into 14 languages. She's also written 10 other books. Some are memoirs. There are two other books on writing. One is called Wild Mind, also very revolutionary. Books on poetry, and in addition to being a writer and a teacher of writing and a spiritual leader, she's also a painter. And her most recent book is Old Friend from Far Away, The Practice of Writing Memoir.
I love that title. Just perfect, isn't it?
It's just absolutely completely suits the book. Do you want to tell us a little of how you chose that title, Natalie?
Well, it comes from the Analects by Confucius. That's writing by Confucius, and one of the first stanzas, they had old friend from far away, and I thought, oh, it said, old friend from far away, how wonderful, or something like that, and it's isn't that what memory is, and isn't that what memoir is about, those old friends from the past that are reappearing.
Right.
It's also, we're also meeting our earlier selves. It's as though there are many incarnations of us. So when we do go through the process of memoir, we kind of reconnect with who we once were.
Yeah, exactly. It's an old friend who we once were, but also memory itself is an old friend. And also you bring up all the old friends that you knew from a long time ago.
Yeah, that's a very satisfying process.
Yeah, it is.
I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who's an artist yesterday. She's a painter and a sculptor. And we were talking about artwork that is not exhibited and discussing that application of unappreciated or seemingly unappreciated work and trying to think about that in terms of writing. And I wanted you to talk a little bit about the validity of unread memoir and what is the point of writing memoir if you're not planning to publish it or if you're unable to publish it?
Oh, that's such a smart question, and no one has ever asked me that.
Wow.
It's that I always say to my students, the real sweetness is in the writing. The other stuff is just work, you know, trying to get it published, trying to get people to read it. Just think about letting that go. The real sweetness and the advantage is in the ability to taste your own life and to have an intimacy with it.
Well, I absolutely agree with that the process is more important than the product, and I'm interested that you feel the same way about that, although I'm not surprised that you feel that way. One of the there were so many quotable things from this book. I thought it was absolutely fabulous, but one of the things I really liked about it was this thought where you say, thank you for whatever you have lived. It all passes. Let it have its time. And I feel as though recollecting things and writing them down, in addition to being a satisfying process, it does leave a record, and it is possible someone in the future will read it, even if we don't think that's going to happen.
That's true, and it's also an affirmation of life. I have lived, I have been here, and I count. And also what it does is, if we understand that each human life matters, then we can't so easily abstract things. We can't plan to drop bombs places because it's a vague population. It's real human beings.
Well, I started a writer's group, and we're writing about our childhoods and so forth, and I'm planning to have that so that my children can have it and see. I wish that I had written down things that my grandparents told me about their childhoods and so forth, because now it's gone from my memory, and of course they're gone, and my parents are gone as well. So I think it's important to pass on to your children things about yourself. I really do.
Let's talk a little bit about one of the things that might keep people from doing that, and you're so good about discussing this in your books, Natalie. Would you discuss the concept of monkey mind?
Yeah, monkey mind is that editor or critic in us that doesn't let us do anything. Don't say that, it's not nice. So-and-so won't like it. Oh, you misspelled that. And finally, we don't write anything because we're so afraid. Writing is really the act of discovery and the willingness to step out and be alive and to speak and to have a voice.
Now, you do say that in here that it's good to read your writing aloud to someone, and you're not asking for their criticism or their comments. They're just to listen, and that is, too, so that you can hear it yourself, because we
do. Yes, and so that you can practice not only writing it, but speaking it,
mm-hmm.
And it's another level of accepting your own mind, because if you look over your shoulder, nobody really cares whether you write or not. And so you have to build a strong spine inside and step forward. And so it's really good. We're always looking for praise or criticism. So to have someone listen and not comment at all is quite wonderful, really. Because after a while, you just have to step forward and be who you are, regardless of anybody's reaction.
I felt there was another line in your book that really helps people do that, step forward and become who they are, and it was this little section. No one believes in himself or herself overnight. You keep practicing. With your effort, you step into the long river of awakened minds, willing to reflect human suffering and glory. And I think it's there's a sort of a muscle that builds confidence, and I think that there is a process to becoming confident to write down what you think.
Yes. Absolutely, it's not overnight with anything. Do we go on a tennis court for the first time and, you know how to play a beautiful game? You build
no.
confidence by practice.
Yeah, I think
that was the paradigm that I broke in 1986 when Writing Down the Bones came out. Before that, we had this idea that a writer was hit by lightning and suddenly could write. And it's not true. It's really an athletic activity, and the more you practice, the better you get at it.
Could you tell us a little bit about how you came to write that groundbreaking book? Because I understand that writing is not just writing for you. It's also a spiritual practice.
Well, how did I come to write it? I came to write it because I wanted to learn it. I was doing it. I was doing this writing practice. I didn't really have the words. You know, I just discovered this. And then over time, studying with Katagiri Roshi, a Japanese Zen master in the Twin Cities in Minnesota, I put the two together, what I had discovered on my own, and then started calling it a practice. You know, because when you first discover something, like you look at a flower, if no one has ever told you the word, you don't know what it is you're looking at. So I had to slowly give language to what I had discovered. And so practicing Zen, I realized, was a reflection of what I was doing. And I put them together. And so I consider writing practice a legitimate Zen practice.
Well, that really comes through in everything that I've read that you've written. It's also interesting to me that that book came after a point of, I believe, a point of frustration for you where you were writing a lot of poetry and not meeting with success and having it published. And I don't remember if it's in this book or something else where you've talked about going on to a different genre, a different form, if you're sort of blocked in one area.
Yes, I think it was. I did write about it in An Old Friend from Far Away, that I just couldn't get any poetry published, and I was, you know, I wanted to be part of the world. So I said, oh, well, then forget it. I'm going to write something else. And I sat down and wrote Writing Down the Bones. I didn't know it would be so successful or anything, but I just tried to write about something else than poetry. But if you look carefully at Writing Down the Bones, each chapter is almost like a poem. So I didn't completely reject poetry. I just put it in a different form.
That's interesting. I noticed in the index to this book, I like the extras in this book, the Old Friend from Far Away, your latest book, which just came out in February of 2008.
Yes, and my first reading on the book tour was in Iowa City.
Oh, fabulous.
And I very fondly remember that reading. I flew into Cedar Rapids, and I think it was 6 below that day.
Yeah, probably.
We did have a really rough winter.
A ride. I couldn't get a ride from Cedar Rapids to Iowa City. And finally, I found someone who gave me a lift. And I really loved reading in Iowa. But I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
Well, I was just saying, my son has had a job indexing books for publishers. And so I always look at the index of books. And what you have sort of in place of an index is guidelines and suggestions for writing memoir. It's like one of the extras. And I really love the way this was arranged.
Thank you. I'm really glad you like it.
Yeah, I think it makes it really
practical. I wanted to make the book very helpful. People.
Well, yeah. Well, it is. It is wonderful. I have a collection of books now. There's a lot of books out about writing for your children. Mom, what did you do this? When did you do that? You know, and so forth. And but you have all different kinds of things in here. And for instance, what was on the top of your daddy's dresser in the drawers, or your uncle's, or your grandfather's? This is, you know, this is stuff we just didn't. I would never think to try to remember that.
That was a page that almost made me cry because I really vividly remember what was on top of my father's dresser. And when he died, I took his little, he had like a little jewelry case with cufflinks in it. Yeah. And I played with those cufflinks when I was 5. You know, I grouped them and just look at them and touch them. And I didn't really understand what they were for back then. But today I still have those cufflinks. And you have so many prompts that are like that.
Right.
That there's bound to be something for anybody who wants to write. And what I've been telling people is if this book, Old Friend from Far Away, doesn't make you want to sit down and write, it might be that you're some other kind of an artist.
Maybe you need to do something else. Yeah. I agree.
It's also those small details is what really make life. Do you know what I mean? Things we don't notice, but we take them in anyway.
Right.
And what's so wonderful about writing is you discover them and wake up to them. Mm-hmm. And in a way, by waking up to them, you wake up to your own life.
I thought it was interesting that you also elaborated on that in this book. There was a place where you say, detail devoid of feeling is a marble rolling across a hardwood floor. And I think that we sort of feel like we've gotten to a new level when we start writing with a lot of sensory details in our writing. But we need even more than that. And I think that you kind of lead people to what that is, what you need besides detail.
A human heart. So there's one level of writing where you use detail and, you know, and it's a good way of writing and that's kind of craft. But then there's another level where the details really tell you about your life and, you know, the underlying things that drove your life. And that's what I think you want to get to in memoir. Who am I? What made my life tick?
And while you're talking about who you are, let's just remind our listeners who you really are. So right now you're listening to KRUU 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. This is Writer's Voices with usually Monica and Carolyn. Monica couldn't be with us today. I'm Cheryl Fusco-Johnson, co-hosting with Carolyn. And our guest is Natalie Goldberg, an incredible writing teacher. She leads retreats. She's published 11 books, and we're really thrilled to have her on Writer's Voices. Another aspect that interested me in your book is you sort of free the writer in everyone, and reading a little about your background to prepare for this interview, I hadn't realized that you were a painter and that you also have these other areas of expertise, and I'm wondering if that might be true of everyone, that we all have all these abilities and we could go in a lot of different directions. And through this book, your latest book, Old Friend from Far Away, you're helping people who may not think of themselves as writers begin to be able to record their family history.
Oh, I definitely think that.
Definitely. You know, writing is a great human activity, and it's available to everyone, and it should be available to everyone. you know, dogs don't write, trees don't write, cars don't write. It's a very, very human activity, and I think it's a deep human need. And that's why, you know, when Writing Down the Bones came out, I opened writing to people who didn't think they could. And across the board, I got letters from quarry workers in Missouri, blue-collar workers in Nebraska, vice presidents of insurance companies in Florida. It was across the board. People want to write and have a need to write because it's a way to know ourselves.
I think sometimes people remember their school days where they had to write something and it was not successful, and so then they thought, well, I can't write anything.
Yes, you know, school did not know how to teach writing.
No.
And I think they were also afraid of it because once you enter Wild Mind and keep your hand going, you know, things come out up that are deeper truths than being polite, and you lose control, which is wonderful for writing, but not so great for the teacher in the classroom.
Right.
So I think what I tell my students, what I'm teaching you is what you should have learned in high school. Mm-hmm. It's that fundamental.
Mm-hmm.
Well, since you're talking about fundamentals, maybe you could talk about your basic phrases that you help people unleash their creativity, like I remember, I don't remember, I'm looking at, I'm not looking
at. Very foundational ones. Of keep your pen going and start with either I remember, I don't remember, I'm looking at, I'm not looking at, I'm thinking of, I'm not thinking of, and also just start writing what's in front of your face. Literally, what do you see right in front of you? And those are very good, solid, foundational things that I come back to over and over again.
And you also take people out in nature to encourage them to write, don't you, when you lead your workshops?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I take them out, not to encourage to write, just because I'm in love with nature. And it's wonderful to get out of the classroom. But, yeah, you know, most people come to study with me in New Mexico, and I want them to have an experience of New Mexico.
Now, in your workshops, do you have a pretty broad spectrum of age groups or...
Yes, very broad. I get sometimes kids from high school all the way up. I think my oldest was in person that was 92.
Oh, mm-hmm. Wonderful. I'll bet they had some great things to write about.
They did, and they loved it. The 92-year-old, I remember her coming up to me and saying, well, now I know what I want to do with the rest of my life.
Well, it's good to know that people are, you're never too old to learn new things or try something new or experiment.
That's right.
Yes.
I was also...
The thing with writing, even if you can't, your legs aren't working so well, or, you know,
Yeah. You're
just not physically so up for things, you can always write.
That's great.
I like that you gave us a lot of memoirs that you thought were wonderful memoirs to read. And I was wondering if any of these memoirs were written by former students of yours.
No, I don't think so. But I do have... former students who have written some fine things, but not, I don't think, in this list.
Well, it is a nice list, and I think it would give, what I tell my writing students, I teach at the University of Iowa Summer Writing Festival. I've done that for the last 20 years, and I always tell them like to at least have a book a month list, and I think for people who are writing memoir, they could go through your list and pick out 12 titles and plan to read at least one a month.
Oh, that's a great idea. Yeah, that's the thing people don't realize. Students come to study with me. They want to be writers, but they don't read. You have to read books because, really, authors are your teachers. And, you know, you read a book and you get to study the author's mind. And that's how you learn to write.
I liked in Old Friend from Far Away where you say, let books grow up between your toes. I thought that was really great.
Thank you.
Some of these titles of the great memoirs to read, A Place to Stand, Rock, Ghost, Willow, Deer. It brings up, you know, all kinds of images that make you want to read these memoirs too. How did you?
Oh, great! I'm glad.
Yeah,
I really like supporting writers, and I like sharing books I love.
Have you read all these memoirs?
Yes, these are all memoirs.
Have you read them all?
I read them all?
Yeah.
No, I haven't read them all. If you see under there, I say these are culled from my favorites and from friends' favorites.
Uh-huh, okay.
But I only ask friends who are really good readers. You know what I mean? I who really knew good books.
I love this one. And When Did You Last See Your Father? By Blake Morrison.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But that's a good one. Yeah. Well, I'm going to share all these things with my writers group at my church. And what I hear, I would try to encourage people to come. They'll say, oh, I can't write. I can't do that. And I say, well, it's just like talking, just like standing.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. And, you know, it's interesting. One of my students' mothers, you know, was always saying, well, what are you going there for? What's going on there? So she brought her old friend from far away, and the next time she spoke to her mother said, I have no time to talk to you now. I am busy writing. I just read this book, and I have a lot to say.
Oh, wonderful.
Isn't that great?
It is. Oh, I should say. Gosh.
I liked also in Old Friend from Far Away how you explain how topics come up to write about. And you have a list of things, and one of them is what you carry. And it reminded me of the book, The Things They Carried by Tim O'Brien, and the dichotomy of tangible and intangible, how you can take certain things and first talk about it in a very concrete way and then talk about it in an abstract way.
Yes, yes. And actually, I originally got that assignment by reading Tim O'Brien, The Things They Carried. Mm. I thought of that assignment after reading that book.
Yeah, that's also a great book. And that's one of the things you say. There was another great section in the book where you talk about having a lot of, I can't remember exactly, a lot of steps. Like you likened it to dancing. Do you remember the part I'm talking about where you have to have a lot of techniques in order to, like, when you're really ready to say what you mean with your writing, so that you'll have those techniques through osmosis by reading other great writers and then be able to.
Yeah, I don't quite remember where I said it. You know, it's funny, I write a book and then it's over.
Oh,
so,
I found it, however. It's this one.
Good.
It's good to know a lot of moves, so when it's your time, you can dance your, I don't know if I can say this word, backside off.
Yeah, you can say it.
But I really like that a lot, just the idea of kind of reading in a way that you're absorbing something through osmosis, but consciously also at times studying other writers, things like The Things They Carried, and noticing what other writers are doing. And there might come a time later on when suddenly that technique is useful for you.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
You talk a little bit about structure. And you ask the question, how do we form our writing into a book, a structure? And then later you say, form is not a trick. It develops out of what you want to say and how you want to say it. And I was looking at the structure of Old Friend from Far Away, your latest book on writing memoir, and I was wondering, I see that it's divided into 10 sections, and I was wondering if you could discuss how you came up with this structure, and if it wasn't immediately discernible to me what the sections represented.
You're very sharp. I'll tell you the real secret. Do you want me to?
Yes.
Actually, I wanted it to be just one flow with no sections. And when my editor looked at the table of contents, she said, Natalie, it's out of control. You need to make it more orderly. And I said, no, I want it to be, you know, nothing broken up. And she said, no, we have to do something. So I hung up. I arbitrarily put in sections, and I called her up and said, well, I've done it. I put in sections, and she said, great, I'm happy now.
Well, that was pretty crafty, because it's not exactly, I mean, when I read it, I didn't notice that it was divided into sections. And then after I read what you had said about structure, I thought, well, I'm going to look at this book and see how this book is structured. And then I tried to understand what the 10 sections were.
The real structure of this book is not that as much as commentary, then the short, go, 10 minutes, write about this, you know, one-liners. And then, you know, more contemplation. It's sort of the movement of the mind and the movement of how you know, you get fed a little, then go do something. Then you get fed some more. Then there's a few, you know, it's more how I teach. It's the rhythm of the way I teach. I wanted this book to be as close in structure so that you feel you're in the classroom with me. And that's really what the structure was.
Well, it had a very natural flow. And I didn't think about structure at all while I was reading it. And what I mostly thought is this is a book that you could have and use for a year or, you know, or longer, or keep. It's the kind of book that you would kind of like.
It's a reference book. And
right,
you just
you want to make notes in it. And,
yeah,
and
exactly.
Paperclip pages, mark sections, and maybe use it with friends.
Yes, exactly. You really caught on. Yeah, the sections were totally arbitrary.
Well, you know,
I'm giving you the back, you know, the inside skinny on it.
You know, we
but
think
the real structure is the way I teach, the movement of the way I teach.
In the past, we've thought of memoir as someone famous writing their life story, you know, and maybe a tell-all book or something. But this brings this home. And
you know,
and that's where it should be.
I'm really glad.
Yeah.
In fact, you address that explicitly when you talk about someone coming up to you at a seminar or a lecture and confiding that they were worried about having lived such an ordinary life that their memoir would not be valuable.
And yes, and I think I say there, how wonderful, please write your memoir. It's valuable because we need some compass. Some of us have had such crazy lives. To read about a regular life is so nourishing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when we think about
the job of you Iowans.
All right.
You may not know us well enough to know that we don't exactly have ordinary, regular lives. I think once you get to know anyone, you discover all the drama. I mean, everybody has. Just
exactly.
Living and breathing, everybody has a lot of drama in their lives.
Yeah.
They do. Especially in today's world.
I was intrigued that you're also a painter. Did you know you were a painter, or did you come to that later in life? Were you always a painter?
No, I didn't know I was a writer either. It sort of was spontaneous combustion when I was about 26 years old in Taos, New Mexico. I started painting, writing, and meditating. So they all kind of came together, and they're really all the same source. It's just different medium.
Do you think that there are going to be future adventures for you? Like suddenly you'll also become a dancer or a puppeteer or, you know, something that you don't expect at all that you're going to be doing?
I would love that if it would happen. But, you know, I'm now 60 years old and I've been doing this a long time and my practice is pretty deep. I'm always hoping, like, well, maybe I'll become a race car driver or something. But it seems like this is the practice for this lifetime.
Well, it's certainly.
I have my eyes open for something new to do.
Yeah, well, it makes life interesting. And just from reading your books, it looks like you really enjoy yourself.
Yeah, I do have a good life.
This is KRUU 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Carolyn. Monica couldn't be with us today, so I'm co-hosting the show. I'm Cheryl Fusco Johnson, and we're thrilled to have Natalie Goldberg, a writing teacher and author and painter and seminar leader, with us on the show.
Now, your book, where is it available? We need to tell people now.
Well, the book is available every place, hopefully. You know, it's in bookstores and at Amazon and wherever people get books, hopefully the book is there. Or if it isn't in a bookstore, the bookstore owner can order it for you.
Oh, yeah. Who's the publisher?
The publisher is Free Press, which is an imprint of Simon & Schuster.
Okay.
And the particular book we're talking about, Natalie's written 11 books. There was a very groundbreaking book on how to write called Writing Down the Bones in 1986. But her newest book is Old Friend from Far Away, The Practice of Writing Memoir. And Natalie, are you interested in sharing your website with readers?
Oh, yeah. My website is www.nataliegoldberg.com, and Natalie Goldberg is one word put together. And I usually list my workshops there. As a matter of fact, I have one coming up in September in Sedona, Arizona, a weekend workshop. If any of you can come to Sedona, it's so beautiful there. And I teach it every other year there, and it's wonderful.
And how did you come to start teaching? Was that a natural progression of once Writing Down the Bones took off? Were you teaching before that book was published? Or was
I was teaching way before that. I'm an old public school teacher.
Oh, so
in the public schools, and I have a teaching certificate. I very, very much honor teaching, and I love it deeply. And so I've been teaching way before any books came out.
I wasn't aware that you were a public school teacher. What grades did you teach?
Well, I kind of jumped around. I taught high school, and junior high were the main places, or the main ages. And then I taught ninth grade, and I taught a lot. You know, my book came out when I was 39, Writing Down the Bones.
Uh-huh.
So I had a, you know, pretty strong working life before that.
Well, that seems like it laid the foundation for all the teaching you've done since then in seminars and workshops.
Yes, I think so. And I also think it helped me tremendously with writing a book, because as a teacher, I learned how to explain things so people would understand.
Oh, that
yes.
makes sense.
Yeah, it does, because that's exactly what this book does. It makes sense of all the things that you've heard about writing and were afraid. All the things you ever wanted to know about writing were afraid to ask. How about that?
Yeah, exactly.
I wanted to read this your dedication here because it's so beautiful. Thank you, sky and tree, big and small, green and red, the taste of chocolate, bread, and pinto bean, this land and other lands, past and future, human, dog, and zebra, everything you know and the things you don't, hunger, zest, repetition, homesickness, welcome. This is for all my students. That is just beautiful.
That is beautiful.
Thank you. I wrote that one night, very late at night, in Paris, in a hotel in Paris.
It's interesting that you can remember exactly where you wrote that. That is wonderful, really.
Yeah, it's not always true, but, you know, I'm not always in Paris.
Sure,
so,
yeah.
I think I remembered more when I was there.
Have you been overseas a lot? Have you been in overseas in Europe quite a bit?
No, probably 10, 15 times.
Well, that's quite a bit, actually.
You know, in 60 years.
Yeah.
So I love to travel, but I don't, you know, maybe 15 times.
Some authors have, you know, you really associate with a certain place, like Faulkner in the South. And sometimes writers get the feeling that if they've been mobile, they won't have as much material because they're not grounded in a particular place. But I was interested in your take on that.
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's a very rich thing. I love when a writer writes about a certain place. I can't remember his name right now, but he wrote some beautiful novels about Albany, New York. A very ordinary place, but he opens it up and gives it a site and a destiny. And Philip Roth has written some beautiful books about Newark, New Jersey. I love that. And Larry McMurtry has written a lot about Texas. And Patricia Hample has written about St. Paul, Minnesota. And I really, really love that. I live in New Mexico, and I mention it in my books, and I've written about it a bunch. But because I'm not originally from here, it's not my root place. And though I love it very much, I don't have the authority that someone who's lived someplace their whole life has. Does that make sense?
It does. Where did you grow up?
I grew up on Long Island in New York.
I thought I detected that little bit of accent, yeah.
But
yeah, it's not so little. And this is after 40 years of being away.
I know.
Can imagine how thick it was.
But a point that you're publishing history illustrates is that you don't have to have a region to be a successful author. You don't have to have always stayed in the same place.
That's completely true, that you don't have to have any of that. And, you know, people have an idea, well, you have to live in a beautiful place like Natalie does. That doesn't necessarily feed the writing life. Wherever you are is the place you write about.
Another thing that it seems like your career illustrates is that you don't have to have a degree in, like, an MFA in order to be a successful writer. Have you actually had any, like, outside of your high school and
teaching degree?
But did you actually ever take a writing class outside of high school?
I took one writing class with Allen Ginsberg in 1976 for 6 weeks.
Oh, my goodness.
And that was it. You know, Shakespeare didn't have an MFA.
Right.
What was that writing course like? Was that life-changing for you?
Well, it was life-changing because he was so wonderful. But I was already writing. But I just wanted to meet him and see what he was like. But I'd already been reading his work, and I was interested because he was interested in the study of mind and how mind works. So it wasn't just about writing. It was also an interest in how writing works.
And that's
how, you know, where it comes from and what it is.
That's one of your passions.
And I really like that.
Yeah, that sounds like that's one of your passions as well, is understanding how the mind works and where creativity comes from. And
yes, exactly.
And equanimity, things like that. We'd like our listeners to have the opportunity to hear you read some of your work. I'm first going to identify our station. You're listening to KRUU 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. This is Writers' Voices with Monica and Carolyn. Monica couldn't be with us today. I'm taking her place, co-hosting. I'm Cheryl Fusco-Johnson. And our guest is Natalie Goldberg. Her latest book is Old Friend from Far Away.
And we want to say that if you missed the first part of the program, if you're just tuning in, this program can be heard again at 8 a.m. on Mondays, the same program. So that's good to know.
Oh, yeah, that is good to know.
Yeah.
And do you have a selection?
Is Fairfield where they have TM?
Yes.
Yes, it
yes.
is. You should come visit us. We're really an interesting community here.
Yes, they are.
Is that where you have that?
Absolutely. TM? Absolutely. We're
I've heard of Fairfield.
Yeah, a dual community. And we recently were named one of the great places in Iowa.
Oh, great. Yes. I'm very fond of Iowa. I really, really like Iowa.
Well, the next time you're in Iowa City, just take a little road trip. Call us up. We'll come and get you.
I'm going to keep it in mind next time.
Yeah really indeed.
We have a town square. I mean, how many towns do you see with a town square?
In New Mexico, all the towns plazas because they were built on, you know, the Mexican idea of a town.
Well, you can see
But town squares are wonderful, aren't they?
They are.
Yeah, it's very cool. With a lot of music outdoor in the summers, you can go and hear what used to be the National Guard band, but it's now a community band that still has some National Guard's people in it. And there's all sorts of music in the streets. We have art walks.
The art walks on the first Friday of the month. Marvelous things going on. Because this is a cultural center of Southeast Iowa, absolutely.
We think so.
It really is.
We just got a new civic center that seats, I think, 500, and we've had Broadway stars come down and entertain us.
Yeah. Oh, so it's great. Yeah.
Definitely we're a destination to see. But we also want our listeners to have, besides hearing us brag about our town, have the opportunity to hear you read some of your books. So do you have an excerpt you'd like to read?
Okay. I just opened to this page, so I think I'll just read it. It's called Moment. In 1977, on Murata Lane, in a small adobe behind a coyote fence, I taught the first writing practice group to 8 tall women. For the last 20 years, I have taught these same workshops at the Mabel Dodge Lujan House, a few hundred yards farther up on Murata Lane. I joke, I have not gone a very far distance in my life. Students come and go. Eventually, we will all die. I fear I will have forgotten to die. I'll be standing in front of the class after everyone I know has long passed. Class, get out your pens. Please help me. If all of you write right now, maybe I can let go and die too. My job will be complete. We talk about eternity. I'm afraid sometimes the only thing that will continue is our incessant chattering thoughts. After all, monkey mind keeps going at the same time we're making love, driving, walking, eating, playing tennis, writing. It takes notice of nothing. It just keeps on. Have you noticed? Yada, yada, yada. Why should our dying be any different? Our wandering thoughts won't pay any attention, but we'll keep on going like a full set of dental impressions, mouthing their way into the afterlife. See if you can nail down eternity right now. Give me this sterling moment just as it is. Don't run out and buy a new dress and a pair of stunning sunglasses. This is it, just as you are. Get it down. Go. Now move from this present moment. Jot down other moments you remember that were strong and clear for you. They don't have to be momentous, such as when you won the state bowling championship or said, I do, at the altar. The mind doesn't work that way. Often it recalls some odd, sniggly instance. You bought a box of oil pastels at a sidewalk sale in some suburb outside Philadelphia, or the time you were frightened of a tailgater you spotted glugging down a beer, his car parked under a bridge waiting for a November Steelers game in Pittsburgh, or the taste of metal when the water ran off a rusty pipe early one summer morning in northern Minnesota, the lilac tree you came upon one May in Santa Fe when you turned the corner. You thought of your mother. She once loved lilacs. You stepped up to the bush and touched the blossoms. A shiver ran through you. Right down into the marrow, you knew you would have to live out, one by one, the interminable last days of your mother's life. Notice that I first asked you to give me the present moment. The present grounds the mind. Look over your shoulder. No past over there. The past can only be found in the present when it carries, when it comes alive in you. Remember, only you carry that past. You bring it into focus now. You find yourself suddenly crying. That's fine, just as long as you keep writing. Don't stop the hand. Write through your emotions, on to another moment. This time you're laughing. Great. Feel what you feel, but don't be thrown off balance and drop your pen. You began with writing, finish with it. Writing is your practice as you mow through your memories, the even chord among the highs and lows. Feel how fluid the mind can be. Moving your pen helps to keep things from getting snagged, caught on some old branch of thought and not able to go on. That was a nice chapter.
Yes, it was. Beautiful. Do you like to write with pen and pencil or a paper and not computer?
Yeah, I write with pen and paper.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I tell people if they want to write with a computer, it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. Well,
it's whatever you want to write with. Main thing is not to have any excuse. Get to work.
Right. But the thing about having a pen and paper at hand in the car, wherever, in your purse, you can jot down ideas as they come to you if you're waiting for a train or, you know, whatever. I mean, it's...
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You can't have the excuse, oh, I don't have my computer with me.
Right.
It's always there.
Well, someday you might be poor and not be able to buy a, you know, pay your electric bill.
That's true.
Yeah, that could happen with gas prices. In your latest book, Old Friend from Far Away, and that's the title of the book that you were reading from, that you say that people should just make a bit of effort, and it doesn't have to be enormous. And I particularly like this little bit of advice. Just go in the right direction, and the trees, insects, clouds, bricks of buildings will make a minute turning with you and salute.
Yes, I think that, you know, being seen and unseen help you when you make effort. And I think that writing is a certain kind of effort. And I think if you make effort, you're supported.
I agree with you.
Maybe not by your mother or your husband or your wife, but something will support you.
Well, yourself. Yourself will support you.
Yes. And I think something outside yourself, too.
Uh-huh.
That's what I said, by a slight, will make a slight turning toward you. the trees and the mountains, etc.
Yeah, I like to do what's called cluster when I get an idea, and you know, I'm sure you know about that technique. And then I can go back
if I do know that.
Yeah, if I can't finish it right then, I can go back and there it is. There's my ideas, and you know, it's really neat.
A little map that you can
consult. Yeah, I love to do that. I've got some clusters I need to work on.
Well, I like the idea of making a little bit of preparation and then. The idea that things support you, and I feel like being able to do this interview today was like an example of that for me, because I've never written memoir, but this summer I took a class with Monica at the University of Iowa Summer Writing Festival on writing memoir, and then suddenly Monica was called away and I got to interview this fabulous writing teacher who just published a book on memoir, and I thought, well, that's got to be something besides luck.
Yeah, that's what they call supportive nature, isn't it?
The universe supporting. And now that I know about your workshops, I'm really interested in maybe someday coming and taking a workshop with you. And I'll try to talk Monica into coming with me.
Well, it's wonderful, and New Mexico is wonderful. You just look on my website and see, you know, what's possible.
Yeah, and Natalie's website is also interesting because it lists her books, and you can also see some of her paintings. And her website is www.nataliegoldberg.com.
Do you get many letters from people that have read your books and comments from people?
Yeah, I get some letters. I used to get a lot of letters, but now that everyone does email, I don't get that many letters, and there's no way you can reach me with email, so I don't hear from people as much.
Did you get sort of overwhelmed with, were you at first getting a lot of email and then you had to, like...
No, you'd had no way of getting me because I didn't give out my email.
Yeah, that was probably a wise decision.
I didn't want to spend time in front of a computer answering emails.
Yeah, right.
When your first book came out in 86, you probably got more letters then. And what was that like, receiving letters from people all around the world?
At first, it was very exciting, you know. I was just amazed because people were responding to me, and I got some very, very beautiful letters. I actually saved some of them. But then it got overwhelming, too. And, you know, I couldn't spend my time answering everyone's letter.
Oh, no.
Well, sort of your books are the answer to the letters. You know, as you continue, as you continue to write more books, those are sort of the answer to the letters, because then people can visit you through the books.
Thank you.
Can you tell us what you're working on now?
Well, I'm working on bringing together a bunch of essays that I've written into compile them into one book. And actually, when I left Iowa on the plane flying out of Cedar Rapids, I wrote an essay about Iowa. So I think that might be in the book.
Have you submitted that somewhere else? Is it published yet?
No, you know, I haven't. And is there any place in Iowa you could suggest me submitting it?
Oh, there's a magazine called The Iowan, and the University of Iowa has a literary journal, which is The Iowa Review.
Right.
Maybe a possibility.
Okay, what's The Iowan?
The Iowan is a magazine that has profiles of people. Like, years ago, I wrote a profile of a children's writer for The Iowan. Usually, you know, there's some connection between the subject and Iowa, so it's either a place in Iowa or a person.
Come out of?
Oh, where does it come? What city? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's Des Moines or not.
Okay, I can look it up.
Yeah.
I can look it up.
Yeah, I have a class.
So I'm doing that, and I'm also writing a memoir. I think it's about my mother. I say I think because, you start one place and it leads you someplace else.
That's true.
Part of the thing that's fun about writing is you sort of discover what you think. So as you're writing this memoir of your mother, you might discover layers of feelings and thoughts about your mom that you didn't realize you had before. That's been my experience.
That's exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's why I love writing. If you knew what you were going to write all the time, why do it? It's no fun.
No, I never thought about that, but that's true.
Do you think you'll be exploring other genres like plays or...
Probably not. Not because I don't respect them or anything, maybe because I'm lazy, or I just have so much to do in what I'm doing now.
Right.
You know, maybe if I run out of things, I will. I love plays, and I love, you know, people who write plays.
Are you still writing poetry?
Occasional poetry, yes. But I hope that all my work is poetic in a certain sense.
Our very dedicated station manager just brought me in a note saying that The Iowan does come out of Des Moines. So it comes from Des Moines, Iowa. And it's a nice, slick magazine.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
classmate of mine has a huge flower garden. It looks like something from, you know, Better Homes and Gardens. She lives in Laurel, Iowa, which is north of Newton, south of Marshalltown, Iowa, and she and her husband were featured in the Iowan.
Oh, with her garden?
Yeah, with her garden, yeah.
Now, do people in New Mexico have actual gardens?
Yeah, we have gardens. People think that New Mexico is a desert.
Right.
Do you think that... I live in what's called high desert. I'm 7,000 feet up, and I'm sitting here right now staring at a beautiful garden. It's different than your gardens, but we definitely don't have the lushness that you have. But it's not like a desert, like the Sahara Desert. You know, we have trees and, you know, everything.
Well, I guess I didn't realize.
And we have snow.
I'll have to come take a workshop and see what it looks like there, because I just don't have feeling about it.
Well, at 7,000 feet, I expect you do have some snow.
I have one thing that I'm wanting to ask you that I don't want to forget, but I know that you were on Oprah, and they did a segment on you and spirituality and nature, and I'm interested, like, what was that like, knowing that you were reaching so many millions of people at one time?
Well, actually, they came out and filmed me, but I don't think they ever played it on the TV, so it never got played.
Well, it's one of those works of art that, you know, has an existence. It's there.
It exists out there, but it was never played on Oprah.
Well, she missed out on that.
Yeah, well, who knows? Maybe in the future.
Oh, that's sweet of you.
Maybe in the future it'll surface.
It has a lot to do, you know, and so I think they try different things, and some work for the show and some don't.
Yeah.
Well, yes, I'm sure.
Tell us also about your Bob Dylan movie.
Oh, it's called Tangled Up in Bob. And it's an hour-long documentary. And I wanted to go up with the filmmaker, Mary Feit, up into Hibbing, Minnesota, where he was brought up, and sort of look at his childhood and see what it was like and how it affected his creativity. Because he left Hibbing at 18, and at 20 he was writing some of his best songs. So, you know, you knew that Hibbing had to have some kind of effect. And his childhood, and I wanted to see what that was.
That must have been really interesting.
It's actually, you can look at that. You can look at my website, and it would take you to the film, or you can go directly to tangledupandbob.com. One word, tangledupandbob, and then .com. The CDs, the DVDs are, I think, available.
Did you find lots of material that
oh,
you
yeah, it's a wonderful film. It's just wonderful. Mary Feit is a wonderful filmmaker. We hung out with Bob Dylan's best friend and with his English teacher.
Oh, cool.
It was just wonderful.
That is neat.
That sounds like an interesting project. Well, see, that's what I was talking about when I asked if you thought you might do plays. It does sound like you just branch
really
out.
Fun.
Yeah, you branch
and
out.
And I jumped on it when the opportunity came. And, you know, if something like that came again, I'd certainly jump on it.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like you're really open to new adventures and new kinds of ways of expressing creativity.
Yeah, definitely I am. Yeah.
Well, we only have a few minutes left. Do you have any other advice that you'd like to share with writers or people in general, not just writers?
Yeah, continue under all circumstances. Don't be tossed away if, you know, someone criticizes you or doesn't like it, or don't even be tossed away by your own mind and, you know, putting yourself down. And make positive effort for the good. Pick up the pen and write. I mean, that's always positive effort. If you write about rape, racism, incest, war, it's still a positive effort because you're standing up and speaking and not being silenced.
Mm-hmm. And you can write, of course, you know, in my day, back in the day, we all had a diary. All us girls had a diary. And I would love to have some of those diaries now. They're all destroyed, but I would love to have some. In fact, when I first got married, I started keeping a diary, and I did find that one. And I can't believe I did as much stuff as I did then. I ended up having 5 children, and that was a lot of work. But even in the early days of our marriage, I did canned and everything, you know. Gosh, those were the days.
Oh.
Well, Well, that's part of that revisiting that old friend from far away.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, I keep a diary now, and it's very helpful, especially medical things, because, you know, if I get a bill for something and I think, I didn't do that, I never went to that doctor, you know, because they don't get them 6 months later sometimes, and look back in my diary, oh, yeah, I did.
Well, that's probably good
today.
With identity theft, it's probably not a bad idea to keep track of what you did and you didn't do.
It doesn't sound like a diary. It sounds like a calendar.
Yeah, well, partly that, too. I try to write down at the end of the day what I did that day, and sometimes it seems like a calendar. That's true.
So you've been listening to KRUU 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. This has been Writers' Voices with Monica and Carolyn, but Monica couldn't be with us today. So I've been co-hosting. I'm Cheryl Fusco Johnson, and we've been thrilled to have Natalie Goldberg, author, painter, teacher, spiritual leader, with us. And I think our time is just about up, but it's been really a pleasure for us.
Oh, Natalie, it has
to
been.
Have you here.
It's been a marvelous experience.
A real pleasure. Thank you so much.
And we really enjoyed it.
Continue visiting you through your books.
Yes, thank you very much, and my love to everyone in Iowa.
Okay.
So you be sure and come to Fairfield next time you're
Remember
in Iowa.
Remember us
now.
Next time you're in this part of the country.
Okay, I will.
Okay.
Bye. Okay. Bye. Bye.
Bye now.
All right. And these books, her books, Writing Down the Bones and Old Friend from Far Away, are available locally, I'm sure. Or they'll order it for you if they're not, you know.
A number of her previous books are available at the Fairfield Public Library, and I'm sure they'd be in public libraries all over the country. A million copies of her first book, Writing Down the Bones, were sold. So that one is really a groundbreaking book. And her latest book is in all... you know, the bookstores, I'm pretty sure it would be in like Barnes & Noble and probably the independent bookstores, for sure places like Prairie Lights, and it might be available right in here in our small town.
But they can certainly order it for you if they don't have it. And it's one it's well worth reading. It'd be a wonderful gift to your parents, your grandparents.
Yeah, even to people who don't think that they are writers. This
Absolutely.
Is that kind of book that unlocks your creativity.
To get them started writing, nothing like it. Okay, I got a thing here to end this. I really like this. Irma Bombeck said, after being diagnosed with inoperable cancer, if I had my life to live over, I would have burned the pink candle sculptured like a rose before it melted in storage.